show for you. Thank you. And thank you to Sarah and Samir and Laney. I'm STD Noor. We'll be talking to you next week. Bye-bye. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded
with information that would never be reported. You're listening to WORT Madison. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show, your weekly roundup of current events, popular culture, and things you, gosh darn it, need to know. Mel is still at rehab, so he's not with us. I won't say what he's rehabbing from, but we do have with us this week, as their co-host, we have back again for the second week in a row, Luthor.
Hello.
Now, Luthor, you were telling me that you have a personal acquaintance with missiles. You have knowledge of missiles, you were telling me.
And the plot thickens.
For a supervillain, that seems like a very important thing to know something about.
Yeah, I really buried the lead on that one. I have a deep, intimate knowledge of all kinds of missiles and use them for my
including
for my
junior
plots.
Missiles, I've heard. Yes, uh-huh. Exactly. Well, you know... Now, you told me you can't say where our missiles, the U.S. missiles, are pointed at. But I have a theory that it's probably France. Wink if that's right. Okay. Yeah, all right. So I thought that might be where it was. So I think that's an excellent training ground for the supervillainry that you are engaged mm-hmm. in right now.
Yeah.
And we're lucky to have you on the show because I know you've got a full plate. You've got a lot of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think the world is lucky to have me on the show because it's really occupying my time.
Yeah, right.
I could be doing a lot worse.
It's a lot worse, yeah. Oh, that's an excellent idea. Maybe, you know, this inspires me. I think this is what we need. You know, the Democrats, the people that are opposed to Trump, no matter what your political beliefs are, that might be the way to go. Distraction. Can we mm-hmm. find something for this guy to get really, really interested in? What are some of his major flaws? Wait, all he has is flaws. I mean, what would be something we could really distract President Trump with?
I'm imagining a giant-sized game of Mousetrap that involves lots of Big Macs.
That's excellent. So he's going towards the Big Macs.
I don't know the details. That's mind right
I
know, now.
I get it. You're a big picture kind of guy. Yeah. I understand. Your world domination is your game.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay. So we got something that. So Big Macs is that? Which did he like chicken better or Big Macs? I'm not sure about that one. We try to make the sweetest honeypot there for mm-hmm. him. Like thing he's really gonna go for? But
just McRib.
Yeah, so maybe through a maze or something like that, mm-hmm. and then we lead him down some alleys and do things. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right. So we have a couple of guests today, but our first guest has not arrived yet. So we're doing this thing. Those of you who listen to the show regularly already know this, but if you don't, the usual co-host that we have, it's Mel and me, Mr. Smarty Pants. And Mel, unfortunately, had a little bike accident, and he's still recuperating from that. So he's not on air, and we thought, well, let's do something a little different. We have some community visitors. So we've been doing this Minion Moments for the last couple of weeks, and we have a couple of Minion Moments set up for this week, but for some reason, our first guest is not here yet, so...
If you're listening... Keep going.
Yeah, keep going. Yeah,
keep
yeah.
going. Come on over.
I don't. Maybe you're in an ox cart right now. I don't know. I mean, we have a wide range of people to listen to the show. And once whenever I think of ox carts, I always think of the Dalai Lama. I once met the Dalai Lama.
Did you? Oh yeah. Where'd you meet him?
I met him. He was at the field house and he was giving a talk. And he's a nice man. This was a few years ago, but when I left a little early because I didn't want to, I didn't want to be there for the crush when he got done, and I happened to come out the exit where I was coming out as well. Because
did you do the thing where you're like, oh, you both go one way. Oh, you both go the other with the Dalai Lama?
That no, no. Cool. I was standing outside of the Coliseum, and he sort of came out. And then it was funny because there was a car waiting for him, and it was like a BMW or something. But anyway, that's part of the story. But I just said to him, hi, and he said, hi. So that was my experience with the Dalai Lama.
You went up a little bit in Maslow's hierarchy towards self-determination.
Well, I literally levitated. So, yeah. I mean, that did go up. But then he got into the car and I thought, where's his ox cart? Right. I mean, that was my first thought. And so I had a friend who was an assistant dean or assistant to an assistant or something over at UW. And I said, what's with the car? And he said, oh, well, that's not his. That we provide that. So I felt better about that afterwards when I realized that, you know. He's got his ox cart at home. Right?
Is that like the Pope's? Is that like the Pope mobile for the Dalai Lama?
Kind of. It was a gift or a loan, I guess it was. But okay. Yeah, I met the Pope once too. Oh. No, I can't say I really met the Pope. I was in an audience with the Pope. In other words, the Pope was there and I was in the audience.
Said, he looked at me.
Yeah. He went up to his little window where he was living and he blessed the crowd and I was constipated for 3 days. But I think for people like me, it works in reverse, you know. Like, so, but he said some things in Italian and, you know, he's a nice man. I figured, oh, that was probably okay, you know. So I wanted to see him before they killed him, you know. That was the poisoned him. That's the way they usually do at the Vatican. So. Anyway, so what's going on in the world? Anything going on in the world right now? We were talking about the Epstein thing. Everybody's talking about the Epstein thing.
Yeah, they're still talking about it.
Do we care about the Epstein
thing? I don't, but some people seem to. A lot of people seem to.
People are wondering whether this is going to be the moment in which the worm turns, that all the cultists are going to be like, wait, that guy just thinks we're a bunch of rubes or something. But
Yeah, it could be.
Problem with that is you have to acknowledge you're a rube.
Yeah. No, I think people probably have a hard time doing that. Like, the worst thing that someone could be is told that they're wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that.
People don't like that.
I hate it.
Yeah, me too. It's the unifying moment. That's what I'm always saying. Yeah. That's what I said last week. I'm saying it again.
Don't tell me I'm wrong. Yeah, exactly. Hey, I don't know if you heard in the news this week, you know, the president of these United States, he was saying that he's a little miffed right now. He's a little upset. He's a little verklempt about the way in which his buddy, his dear friend, the president of the Russian Federation, is not really kind of like being very amenable to, it's sad when these celebrity couples break up. But apparently he's issued some threats. He issued an ultimatum to the Russian president, and it's a 50-day ultimatum. He said that Moscow has to come to a peace deal. This is President Trump has issued this ultimatum before implementing penalties that have been drafted by Congress, and these penalties are, you know, supposedly very serious things. But can you guess what Vladimir Putin has been doing as in reaction to that?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Yes. Completely unfazed, apparently, by Trump's ultimatum. And this is the whole, you know, Trump the taco, right? Trump always chickens out. So according to a director of the Carnegie Russia Eurasia Center in Berlin, a man by the name of Alexander Gubiev says, I don't think the Russians are overly impressed. Yes.
Yeah, no. A stern talking to from Donald Trump.
And there's another line in the sand. Yeah. So let's see. Oh, Mike Huckabee is in the news. I was amused by this one. Mike Huckabee, did you know that Mike Huckabee is the U.S. ambassador to Israel?
I did actually know that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I just found this out and I'm cracking up. I mean, they can't do anything funny enough for us, right? But he made an unusual appearance this week. Did you read about this?
No.
He showed up. They're having the corruption trial for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Because this guy he's been, you know, indicted for bribery, fraud, breach of trust, you know, just like any great world leader.
He's also wanted. He also has a warrant out for his arrest from the international courts.
Criminal court. International criminal court. Yeah. Exactly. But so It's pretty unusual, but apparently Huckabee was there in the courtroom, I guess, to offer. What he said, it was an act of friendship for him to show up. So, you know, so this is, of course, this is the ambassador from a leader who's been convicted of falsifying business records to conceal a sex scandal. So, of course, you know, according to Mr. Trump, Bibi Netanyahu's trial should be canceled immediately, giant letters, or a pardon given to a great hero, capital G, capital H, who has done so much for the state, capital S. I love his unusual capitalization. I feel like I'm reading some 18th century manuscript or something. I mean, is that all the German in his blood? He just had naturally capitalizes nouns? I mean, I don't know what it is that he has, feels like he has to do that.
No, I think all Netanyahu needs to get off is Mike Huckabee to pray for him. Lay hands, start speaking in tongues.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Do you have a lot of personal experience with people of the Huckabee ilk?
I grew up in the South.
Oh, so, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Virginia. It's like, I don't call it the Deep South.
No, that's Upper South. Yeah.
You know. But yeah, I've been adjacent to that type.
Yeah.
I have family in Arkansas, and Mike Huckabee's from Arkansas.
He sure is.
He is. And I know people who like him.
Yeah, but. Well, I guess this whole thing about ambassadors going and, I mean, we're supposedly one of the things we're supposed to be doing right now is we're supposed to be keeping our nose out of world affairs, right? This is this whole isolationist kind of narrative or whatever. But we're getting it heavily involved in the political struggles of whatever right wing leader that, you know, that President Trump takes a cotton
yeah,
to.
Yeah, we just can't help ourselves.
No, we can't. Stop me before I interfere again. Yeah.
The whole Southern evangelical Israel connection is always a little creepy, in my opinion. That's all I got about that.
Well, creepy. I mean, I think the official party line is that they're all going to hell, you know, the Jews are. But, you know, they're instrumental in, you know, God's great plan or whatever.
That's on the official platform on the website. The Jews are going to hell.
Oh, I'm sure it is. They don't play it up a lot.
Don't clip me on that one.
Exactly. Former President Obama was in the news this week. He says,
I'm sorry for him.
Yeah, he told the Democrats to stop whining. That's what he said.
And if you tell someone to stop whining, there has to be a follow on.
Yeah.
Stop whining and do something.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's a very good point. He says, too many people have been cowed into silence. This was supposedly private remarks, but of course nothing's private. Mr. Obama scolded Democrats for failing to speak out against President Trump and his policies. And suggesting that they were worried about retribution. Well, I think you should worry about retribution, but the question is whether that controls you or not. Apparently, he said, it's going to require a little bit less navel-gazing and a little less whining and being in fetal positions.
He really said fetal positions?
Apparently so. Oh, this is according to quotes from the New York Times here.
What's Obama up to these days? Like, he's just coming out of the hills just to scold Democrats that they're in the fetal position.
I think he's burnishing his brand right now. Is what I think he's doing.
Yeah, what's his angle here? Yeah. Maybe he's going to be the next MyPillow guy.
Really?
Obama's got something up his sleeve.
What would be... That's another next excellent point. If Obama were to hawk some line of personalized merchandise, what would be involved there? Basketballs? I mean, that's...
Yeah. Jet skis?
That would be good.
Obama jet skis?
I do have a... I did get a... for a friend when I was in Hawaii a few years ago, I did get a bottle opener that was in the shape of Obama on a surfboard.
Oh.
So, yeah. He was looking pretty good, too.
I want to look this up.
Yeah, look for Obama on a surfboard, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. Okay. I got an AI image first thing.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, there's an actual product you can buy.
All right.
It's just like, you know.
I'd buy an Obama surfboard if I surfed.
Yeah.
Why not? It'd be funny. If you're listening, Obama, you have one customer in your future endeavors of surfwear.
Yes, yes, indeed. So let's see. What else we got here? I see all these stories that are not amusing at all, and I think I should say something about that, and then I feel like, I can't if I can handle it. But
let's see what we can handle.
Yeah, well, you know what it's going to be. Just this week, it was announced that the death toll in the war against Gaza is about 58,000 now. So
yeah,
it's like
yeah, and that's just the official numbers.
That's just the official. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. That's just the official numbers, and it doesn't tell you the level of suffering that's going on every single day as people try to live under those sorts of conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, and we have to be reminded that our government is complicit in it, and our taxpayers, our tax money is going towards that. And it's always bizarre trying to, like, grapple your personal relationship to it, yeah. Even because we see the news headlines, and maybe we see images online, but it's like, it's so disconnected from our everyday lives here.
Yeah.
Even though our government is like, has their hands in doing this.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, let's look back 60 years at the Vietnam War. I mean, that was the whole thing about that. People watched it on television, and
yeah,
for lots of folks, the basic fabric of society, especially if you're middle class or above, it didn't change much at all.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There were all sorts of comments about how this is the weirdest kind of war ever because there's a whole underclass of people that are engaged in it, and then everybody else is just kind of like, you know, that nothing seemed to visibly change.
Yeah, it's like, and then this is even further abstracted.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, it feels unreal in a way.
Yeah. Caller said you used the word verklempt in a negative way, but he thinks it's meant positively. Well, I'll tell you something. Verklempt is actually not a Yiddish word. It's a made-up Yiddish word that Mike Myers made up, actually, for Saturday Night Live. And Linda Richmond, the character that he played, which actually was a parody of his own mother-in-law, she used the word to describe herself being somewhat not upset, but distraught, or kind of like, I'm so verklempt. She couldn't speak because she was so kind of, you know, in this kind of way. She was she couldn't move on from there. So I don't know. I think it just means it's a made up word. So I think the only real context for it is the way in which it was used on Saturday Night Live back 15-20 years
ago. I have a adjective. Overcome with emotion.
Yeah.
I find myself getting a little verklempt just thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. So our first guest called, and he said he couldn't come in today because of a work emergency.
Apparently, the emergency is that you have to work.
Apparently he works in a lab, and they had a freezer failure, and he's rescuing specimens. The mind reels. I'm not sure what specimens of what.
I'm verklempt.
I'm verklempt, too. I'm wondering if we're into COVID, too, now. Oh, the freezer went down.
It turns out our guest is patient zero for the next pandemic.
Exactly. But he said he couldn't come in today because of a work emergency.
What do you think it is? What do you think the specimens are?
I'm assuming that it's they're trying to grow mastodons. This is something that Mel is very interested in, and I assume that anybody that would want to be on the show would probably be in on the ground floor of the mastodon reengineering.
Pleistocene rewilding. Yeah,
exactly. Very good. I appreciate that. Yeah, the Pleistocene rewilding, which, of course, is totally bogus, right? I mean, it's not going to be the actual creature at all. But nonetheless, this is something that Mel has talked about this many times. So this is my theory that if you're listening to this show and you've had a freezer failure and you're rescuing a specimen.
Where do you think the Pleistocene rewilding idea came from?
You know where it came from. Too many people were watching those Jurassic Park movies, and they thought, but of course you can't do that, but you do have remains because it's within the time of human beings existing, the megafauna went extinct. So you are able to find examples of that, which make it a lot more readily you know, the DNA is readily available and you can do that. So I suspect that the idea, the inspiration came from too many people watching Jurassic Park movies. And then, but somebody said, well, we can't make dinosaurs because we don't really have much from them. But we do have frozen mastodons, so we could probably do something with that.
Yeah, it doesn't make as interesting of a movie. You know, just a mastodon.
Well, this is an interesting. I've been reading a lot recently. So I teach classes in environmental ethics. I've been reading a lot recently about sort of like what's the silver bullet. You know, I'm reading this one book by this one German philosopher. He's saying we're all too into science. It's all about, it's all science's fault, right? And then I'm reading this other book by this Japanese philosopher, and he's saying it's capitalism. Obviously, it's capitalism. It's all about capitalism. Mm-hmm. But you know, before we had science, before we had capitalism, we had primitive humans wiping out the megafauna. So I think it's more just us. Like, we're just kind of like, we got to clear the land of whatever it is so we can have all of it, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. What is it about us, though? What can we change about ourselves that...
If we were dumber, if we were a lot dumber, it would be...
See, that would help.
I've had discussions with students about this. It's like, is intelligence an objectively good thing? You know, so people say, no, we're just biased because we happen to be that kind of species. Like, no, if you made badgers really a lot smarter or beavers a lot smarter, they'd take over the world, right? I mean, obviously is objectively a positive feature.
Well, you're a philosophy guy. What do you think that other non-human species fear death? In the same way that we do,
I don't know. They because death, for the way you're talking about it, is an abstraction.
Yeah,
they fear dying.
Right, right,
right. They're pushed back against that. They push back against injuries. They push back against predation, whatever it might be. But the idea of something more general than that, it seems hard that they would be able to cognize that. I mean, it just, they've got concepts, obviously. I mean, you know that animals have concepts because every dog that's ever looked at a vacuum cleaner barks at it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, why? Every dog chases a bicycle. Why? I mean, so they obviously have little things, little, you know, niches in their brains where things fit that though they'd lack language, we would think of as being concepts. They connect with other things in various ways. But I don't think they really have a concept of, most things don't have a concept of
like
death.
They resist it when it's like coming towards them or is very imminent.
Yeah, and humans are like this too. We do things for reasons, but the reasons may not be available to us.
Yeah, yeah.
They may be objective because of our species situation, the context and so on, and our motivations.
Do you feel like when you're talking about intelligence being kind of a root problem, is it that the way we fear death arises from the way that our brain sees itself, or like our self-awareness because our brains are highly intelligent?
Oh, that we have the ability to pose to ourselves counterfactuals? I mean, that's the secret to why we're successful. We're able to think, we're able to do counterfactual thought experiments to determine what to do before that, including the counterfactual thought experiment that led to science, which is, what if we're not getting the best information being the kind of animal that we are? Imagine that we were just not this kind of animal. What might be out there? And these were the only ways that we can sense the world around us. That was the thing that led to science, basically pulling yourself outside of your immediate reactions to your environment, which evolved to, you know, find mates and find food and so on. So once you're able to step outside of that through the thought experiment, then you start thinking, this is actually just receiving information through our regular structures is not going to be sufficient. So then you have to come up with all these artificial things like double blind testing and experiments.
The scientific method.
And exactly. In the Middle Ages, people wanted to know what a rainbow was. They just went out and stared at it with their tongues lolling out, you know. And then Newton said, hey, we could make a rainbow in a room. Here's a prism. Now let's fiddle around with it.
Newton for ruining our fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, man.
he was a big party pooper. There's no doubt about that.
Geez.
It's like, no, if everything moves exactly like this, yeah, you would say that.
Yeah. No, we need more staring straight into the sun with our tongues falling out. Yeah. That'll solve a lot of the world's problems.
Oh, let's see. Well, I think that's the division in our society right now. It's like, I don't know nothing about nothing, but my personal experience tells me everything about everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so I don't need to consult. I don't need to ask people who actually know something about this. I mean, my picture of experts is no more elevated than you know, when we were all living in the trees, one of the monkeys was higher and it could see the leopard better than us. Maybe we should listen to that monkey.
Mm.
The problem is the first monkey that figured out they could make all the other monkeys run around like maniacs by pretending that there was a leopard there or whatever it was, right? That's what we still are worried about. That monkey that goes makes the leopard noise when really they're just laughing their monkey butt off.
When I start thinking about like human nature as the cause of all of the world's problems, that's when I get into the depressing paths. Because it's like I have to tell myself that like no, we can change, or like these things aren't laws; they're just trends or something. Yeah. Like we can be aware of it and right the course.
Sure.
I don't know if that's right. That's what keeps me going, I guess.
I think it was Chesterton, who the famous Catholic apologist, who said that out of all the things that Christianity posits, the one thing we know for certain is that original sin is real. Everything else probably made up, but original sin is real. Yeah, that's probably right. You're going to be selfish. You're going to be lustful. You're going to be hateful. You're going to, that's the way it is. So, you know, just deal. Just deal with that. Any rate. So let's see. I got some energy department hires skeptics of climate change. That was a good one.
That's good.
Tax fighter now writes the tax rule. That's also a good one. You gotta love that. Let's see. Administration won't publish climate report. Authorities previously agreed to find post findings on a NASA website. Well, NASA, we're going to be sending organ sacks to Mars soon. I think that's the only thing they're doing these days. According to one of the people who worked on this Texas Tech climate scientist, Catherine Hayhoe, she said, she's the chief scientist at the Nature Conservancy. She said, this document was written for the American people, paid for by the taxpayers, and it contains vital information we need to keep ourselves safe in a changing climate. But the Trump administration on Monday said that it's going to no longer have this readily available for people to look at.
Nah. Yeah, they said, nah.
I got to say, this is one of those things where not all of us are able to cognize counterfactuals as readily as others. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that people didn't understand is what it would actually be like to deport as many people as the Trumpies said it would. Right now, 6 months into the Trump administration's effort to carry out the largest mass deportation in U.S. history, a new poll found that the American public is once again warming to integration, or immigration, not integration. A sustained increase in migrants crossing the borders back in 2021 had stirred anxiety. But now that they see what it's like, when you really take what these people are saying seriously and they see the actual physical results, people have been growing less negative on the issue. With the share of those wanting to see immigration decrease, now only about 30% of the population, at least in recent polls by the Gallup folks. It's a pretty conservative polling organization. It had been as high as 55% in 2024, of course, probably contributed to President Trump's election victory. A record high of adults in the United States right now believe 79% that immigration is a good thing for the country. So just have to slap them in the face with a little reality.
79%.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
I wonder if they specify from where.
Norway.
Yeah.
Remember, that was Trump's thing back the first time. He was like, we need more people from Norway. He's like, nobody from Norway is coming here now. They came here when it was an impoverished country in the 19th century, but that's about it. Anyway.
Okay, wait, what was the tax one again? The person who's...
He's a tax lawyer that's been helping people evade taxes for years. So he's now going to be writing the rules.
Oh, okay.
On what income tax and various other.
I feel like
taxes.
Now they're just doing they're doing an end zone dance.
Yeah.
You know, like
I like get that too.
They've
I
been
get...
doing this for decades, they're like, it's so locked down. We can just say it. We can just write newspaper articles about it. We can just, you know. What are you going to do, huh?
What are you going to do, huh? Yeah, exactly. Stop hitting yourself. Stop your whining. I mean, and it works, right? Because what happens is the wave propagation of information is like, you know, here we are talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
They do something so outrageous, over the top and crazy, and you're like, oh my God, what are they going to do next? Well, here we are talking about it, so... By the way, just want to let everybody know that the measles outbreak in Illinois and North Dakota is, they think, coming to an end. So health officials in both of those states say that the state's measles outbreaks are effectively over, pointing to a continuing slowdown of measles spread. So that's a positive thing, of course, in a time when measles is like on the rise.
Is RFK Jr. taking credit for this?
I don't know. He's probably upset. I think he's working for measles. That's what I assume. Noted measles advocate, RFK Jr. Yeah.
He's getting paid. He's getting paid by measles.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, it looks like we're about time to do the mid-program break.
And, is our second minion here?
Our second minion is here. Ellen is out there ready to go, and I think I have a present for her. Well, not actually a present. It's a gift from a donation she made, and ooh, I think she's bringing something in too. So I'm going to go out there and lobby and welcome her in, and we'll see her in about maybe 5 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that.
All right. We'll see you later. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
Walk with me.
Walk with me.
Talk with me.
Talk with me.
And you'll know. Stop my heart from dying.
Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
FPC Live presents Murder by Death, Farewell Tour, with Laura Jane Grace on Friday, July 18th at the Sylvie. Formed in 2000 in Bloomington, Indiana, Murder by Death have spent 25 years carving a resolute DIY path with their special blend of literary orchestral rock. But after playing hundreds of shows around the country, making many albums and many fans, the band is going on one last ride and then hanging up their instruments. Says founding guitarist Adam Turla, "On the one hand, we've had a long-running career where we got to make art for a living, but on the other, we have always eluded any kind of traditional success." Opener Laura Jane Grace is an American musician best known as the founder of the punk rock band Against Me. Tickets for the show are available at thesylvie.com. FPC Live presents Murder by Death Farewell Tour with Laura Jane Grace on Friday, July 18th at the Sylvie. Live music lives at WORT Madison.
The Community Immigration Law Center is holding a fundraiser on Thursday, July 31st from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Cardinal Bar. Every day we hear news about this administration characterizing all immigrants as criminals and terrorists. But the majority of them are hardworking folks just living and supporting their families. Our current administration is shamefully ignoring and bypassing existing and well-established laws that enshrine and guarantee human and civil rights and due process. The Community Immigration Law Center, CILC, is committed to ensure that immigrants get proper representation and a fair hearing in court. The event starts at 5:30 with music from Tony Castaneda. Our featured speaker is Grant Sovern, an immigration attorney and founding board member of CILC, who will describe the essential work of the center and what it means in these turbulent times. The Community Immigration Law Center is holding a fundraiser on Thursday, July 31st from 5:30 to 8 p.m. at the Cardinal Bar. You're listening to WORT Madison.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
So our guest for the first half was not able to be here. There's some kind of biological organisms are running around. They escaped from the lab, and he's busy tracking those down. But we do have our guest, our Minion Moments guest for the second half. She's here. She's ready to go. She brought us a little present, something to look at, and this is E-Town. Now, E-Town, you've been on the air. You told me you used to actually have a program up in Duluth.
I did. I worked at a public radio station, actually two of them.
Yeah.
And I started back in 1974 up at Duluth, and it was the student station.
Yeah.
And then we got some power, and we bought one of the stations that had been a commercial station. And so that's when we went to 100,000 watts.
Wow.
And that was a wonderful experience because we reached all the way up into our fellow friends, the Canadians. So I had an opportunity to experience that type of radio experience where you're not only here in the United States, but you're international.
Cool.
And on a good night, that signal could really bounce up on that hard rock. So we kept a lot of, and still do, our Jack Pine Savages happy.
Excellent. Well, of course, we have a lot of people now nowadays that listen to us. They go to online or they listen to us on a podcast or something like that, which is nice because we have people, when we do our pledge drives, we have people from all over the country and sometimes outside of the country that pledge to the show. So what kind of program did you have?
Multiple programs. We had afternoon programs and up into the evening, but my specialty was jazz.
Oh, okay.
Always been a jazz hound.
Okay.
I have to say my uncle was a band leader.
Yeah.
And everybody played a horn. So it was quite
everybody
interesting
played a horn.
Experiences when you had
that seems sort of monotonous.
Family gatherings of everyone blowing something.
So what kind of jazz did you like or what did you play when you were
all
doing
kinds,
this?
All kinds.
Yeah, yeah.
And still to this day, I'm always trying to see who I can experience and be a part of. And I have to say our community is blessed with amazing musicians. Mm-hmm. You have your 10 musicians and 100 bands. It's Madison all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I take hats off to all of them and all the people who support them, especially the people in the background, because having not maybe understand what it feels like when someone keeps blowing that horn into the back of your head as they're keeping their embouchure going can be a little irritating at times. So I have to say, I hope everybody's out there taking a long walk sometimes.
Do you still play music?
I do not. I unfortunately had to move most of my musical instruments on, and now I pretty much tap my fingers.
Yeah, yeah.
Shake a tambourine once in a while.
There you go.
But in the past, I was involved in music and singing and in different bands up in the Duluth area.
So I went before my grandmother passed away, she did a few years ago, I introduced her to big band music. Now, this is funny because this would have been music she would have listened mm-hmm. to when she was a young woman. But I asked her, she was very excited by it. And I asked her, well, why didn't you listen to this kind of stuff like Jump Jive and stuff when you were younger? She said, good girls didn't listen to music like that.
I think I've heard that one before.
That was not what good girls did. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't have been such a good girl.
And now she finally came around.
She did. In fact, I made some CDs for her and stuff like that, and she was very excited by that.
I have a story like that. I actually took my mother to the VFW in her town. A very dear friend of ours was playing, and they were doing karaoke, and she's known this young man since he was very young, and now he's a grown-up and children and all that. And she was in the background going, now I understand why you go out at night. This is so much fun.
Just got to get them to dip their toe in the water. That's what you got to do.
Well,
you go listen to live music now?
I do. I just finished volunteering at the Fête de Marquette, which is, of course,
excellent.
Amazing production here. Yeah. And I've been able to find myself backstage many a time with our fantastic people that come here from all over the United States and get to be that sort of smile that greets them and tells them where we're going to hang their hat and if they need something to drink, you know, come and see me kind of person. So I have to say, we do a good job here. Yeah. I have to say the musicians, they really enjoy coming and they actually bring their families and sometimes they'll stay 1 or 2 days. So
wow, that's great.
Good job, everybody.
That's great. So why do you listen to Mel and Floyd?
You're very humorous. I needed
a lot of humor in my life.
I'm always concerned. You know, it's like, are you okay? They just let you out of the home? What's going on here? You know.
Well, I kind of feel like I'm a mole in the room often because I do find myself at political meetings where I just kind of sit and listen, but I don't necessarily agree with all the things I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And so I guess I'm keeping an eye on things for everybody.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, I don't know. It's funny with us. It's hard to, at one point in time, you know, our station has gone through so many changes in terms of, because it's an eclectic place. And I remember one time when we were first starting to do this program back in the early 90s, because we've been doing it now since the early 90s, we were much more, I would say, more sort of hard left, I think, would be our editorial policy here. And people thought that we were bad because we were laughing. You know, it's like laughing is bad because, you know, how can you laugh when the world is so horrible? And what we've discovered in the meantime is, because the world is horrible, and if you're serious and paying attention, sometimes you do need to have that kind of back off a little bit just for the every now and then. So,
well, I really think we give ourselves the ability to try to find the humor, and it's important to find humor because it gives you a launching pad, and it also gives you an opportunity, I believe, to make a balancing statement. Because if you're always saying something negative,
yeah,
it has an effect. So by having humor or something, I think we can kind of balance it out, and maybe I'll meet at the table and try to talk.
Yeah, I think that's true. I also think that, you know, we can treat the world as a field for action, and that's appropriate, and we should be doing that. But sometimes we can step back and treat it as a kind of a aesthetic object, look at it just for the features it has and not necessarily inspire us to action, just like we enjoy beautiful paintings or beautiful music, as you do, and so on.
I just have to say that when you're just working with sound, and you say to yourself, well, look, I'm just listening to this, but look how my mind puts its own pictures in place. And this is the beauty of radio. And this is where we get our individual experience, I believe. And then that brings us to our community. And I have to again say that our fundraising here at the station, there's an amazing group of volunteers that allows us to be able to reach all over this community, far and wide. And the door is always really opened. So I just want to say that this is something that makes us a plus in our community. And sometimes the struggles that we all go through make us stronger. So I salute us all, and the ship is going out, and we're all ready, aren't we?
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to have to start drawing on some of that because, of course, with the recent announced cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, that will affect us. It's not going to be devastating, but it will affect us. And people out there in the community, and just segue from what you're saying, people out in the community that really value this resource, this is the time for us to step up in a lot of ways because, again, we can't rely on some of the funding sources that we did in the past. It's not devastating, but it's definitely real. So,
well, we, again, have different ways that we can source our funding. And I think one of the things is that people need to reach to our foundation department, and that will help as our future needs and goals. Because as I look out over our community, often I see many of us in stages, as myself, in life where we can make choices for our futures. So I ask everyone to think about that. And feel free to just dial up and ask. There's a lot of wonderful people who can answer questions. Far and wide.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me here today. And I did bring my crystal radio set.
That's we like to draw attention to the limitations of the medium by talking about things you can't see. But that is very nice. Now, what is a crystal radio? Explain that to us.
This is the first radio I ever saw in my life. And I guess you can build one out of a lemon. Is that correct?
I don't know that.
I think you can do something with some wire bent and a lemon.
I don't know if I can.
Maybe you can.
We're talking about the monkeys, and I was kind of, my mind was going, well, what would happen with a, you know, the coil of copper wire and monkey and some, nice lemon and stick some in their ear and all of a sudden, bingo.
I heard that, I just saw this, I think this was, I saw this on the Colbert program. He was talking about how chimpanzees in parts of Africa are decorating themselves with sticks and twigs to look more exciting, like they're putting them in various orifices or something like this. Like, because it's chimpanzees have fads too, right? It's like this is the latest thing. You've got some, you know, some ferns sticking out of your ears. People really take notice.
I love that
idea. We do have some hairstyles like that right now, so maybe they're emulating us. I don't know what to say about that one. You know, they do communicate.
I love the idea of trendy chimpanzees.
Yeah,
that's fun.
They have, I mean, this is the thing. It all depends on how you define culture, right? Because there are things that various activities, practices, and so on that spread through chimpanzees through through learning from one another. So
I recently was at the zoo, and I have a necklace that looks like strawberries and real size, and they have rhinestones in it, and they're bright red. And so I happened to be sitting on the floor close to the chimpanzees And he came up to the window, and he saw my sparkling strawberries around my neck. And he wasn't leaving that window. He wanted those strawberries. Before you know it, of course, I had a crowd around me.
What a lucky chimpanzee over there. She's got her own necklace of strawberries. Some have so many, and others have so few. I had a friend who was studying anthropology back in the day, and he was watching, I think it was gibbons, if I'm not mistaken. And this was part of his work that he was doing, his field work, and he was watching these gibbons. And he had a beard when he first started doing it. But his girlfriend didn't like his beard, and so he shaved it off. And the thing about it is, having a lot of facial hair for male primates is a sign of dominance. And the minute he shaved the beard off, they were all looking right at him, you know, like they were just like, down you, you know, you've just slipped down the hierarchy.
I could make a joke, but I won't.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Fill in the blank, listeners.
Yeah. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly.
That's one of my mottos.
That's what we have to watch.
You know, more often.
Mel and I went to a meet and greet out in Belleville? I can't remember where it was now. It was far out, but it was somebody that was listening to the station, and they asked that we could come and talk to them. And one of the people said, "Have you ever said the F word on the air?" and at that point, I had. I was on a rant about something. And Mel had not. And then the very next week he did. It was like a post-hypnotic suggestion or something. Came on the air and it just popped right out of his mouth. And it was so funny because he had just got done telling these people, no, that's never happened. We're very careful about these things. And then, what do you know? It's just like this little thing got planted in his brain and off out it came.
I'm not on the air that often. It's funny. I just had that thought about 10 minutes ago.
Really?
That like, oh, I hope I don't say the F word.
So, okay. There used to be. So I had a friend who was married to a broadcaster here in town. I think it was on the Channel 3 or something. It was early morning program. And I met him through her and was asking him some questions because he was on very early in the morning. And I said, do you ever have out-of-body experiences or do you ever have – because if you don't get enough sleep or you're up too early, you have all kinds of like weird things that happens with your brain because being awake and being asleep are not discrete states for most of us. And he said, no, but I keep thinking I've said the F word on the air. And then he'll during the breaks, he said, I'd ask everybody on the crew, did I say it? No, you didn't say it. It's like he was obsessed with the thought that he wasn't tracking what he was saying closely enough to know whether he had said that or not, which I thought was incredibly funny.
Well, I know when I was on the air late at night, you know, you didn't always switch your microphone off.
You're right.
So there might have been a moment when that might have drifted off the airway.
That'll hold little SOBs. Yeah, right.
Oops, that's one of those. Oh, sorry, click.
So you've already shared with us your ideas about how we could get people involved and helping out with the foundation. Anything else you want to say about this moment, just in terms of media, in terms of where we are politically? I mean, what are some of your thoughts on that?
Wow, that's a vast one.
Yeah, it's
big. Okay, everybody, guess what? I'm going to grab that tether. Boop. I believe that we as a group of people will come together and have many conversations. And in these conversations, we'll find many things that we agree on and many things that we don't agree upon. And that's the beauty of the whole experience. And as we're willing to have these conversations, and maybe some of the uncomfortable ones, we'll be able to bring up some of the things that we really need to work on to make it better than it is now. I mean, if you think back about when radio started and how the whole family would gather around and mm-hmm. share the experience together, mm-hmm. I think in many ways this conversation is one of those where you will have people getting together and discussing together mm-hmm. and putting their phones down. Not to say that we can't have our phones up, but that we can actually have that one-to-one conversation mm-hmm. And share it. We're skipping our stone. We're going to need some flat water so we can get lots of skips and then mm-hmm. we'll see what happens.
You're very good at, like you said earlier, painting a picture in my mind of using words and sounds and I love what you said about everyone is experiencing what they're receiving over the airwaves through their ears and painting a picture in their mind differently than everyone else.
Yeah.
but then sharing that together, mm-hmm. it creates something that not one person could create on their own.
Right. Yep.
Well, I had the experience living in Duluth with a young man whose nickname was the Iceman, and he worked at our radio station and eventually became a head of the radio station and there on the reservation in Wisconsin up north. And the Iceman ran the station for a while. I don't know too much history because my life moved on. But as we lived together and as a roommate, I got to experience what it was like to be with a person who used other skills to manipulate through their world.
Mm.
And that was a wonderful experience. And I do remember the day he said to me, and we'd known each other a long time, he said, I would like to touch you because then I'll know what and who you are. And so just to have that experience with someone you've known so very long, to allow them to have that experience too, so in their mind they knew who you were, mm-hmm. and your what you took up in space and time and mm-hmm. and all of that. I mean, this is what we're doing. How do we communicate that over the air mm-hmm. in a way that I just was sharing this experience?
Yeah.
Because I think that's what we truly need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's good.
That's very beautiful.
Well, I got to tell you, I've always loved radio, you know, and part of the reason why is the very thing that you're saying. There's something essential that's coming through when people are speaking that doesn't have to do with a lot of the other things that are important, but for that moment and in that message are not essential. Do you know what I mean? I've had images. The funniest thing is when people meet Mel and I, and they say, you're nothing like what I thought you were going to look like.
Hmm.
And we had this one time, we were up at the farmer's market meeting people, and there were these young ladies, and they came racing towards our table until they saw us. And then it was like a cartoon. They were going, ah! You know, they came to a screeching halt. And I said, you thought we were younger, didn't you? And they're like, yes. And I said, well, what did you think we looked like? And they had an image for Mel, and I said, what did you think I look like? And they said, well, we thought you were like this skinny punk with tattoos all over your body, you know? And I thought, you know what? That's great, because they were able to process me through their image of mm-hmm. what they thought I was in a way that brought me in to their mentality and the place that made them, exactly, she's hugging herself right now, in the place that felt comfortable, that kind of person. And that's what radio did. They focused on that message. They had a peripheral image of what I looked like. That was not essential. They liked what I was saying, and so, or whatever, tolerated it, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, that was what I like that element of radio, actually. I like that, just that it's about words and it's about sound.
Well, know? Remember, we are guests in other people's environments.
Yeah.
And we're invited in, and we help to create the atmosphere. I mean, how many times late at night do you switch around on the dial going, man, I just can't find what I want to listen to?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an invitation. And I believe we have been in many, many places with many, many people. This town just produces amazing amount of energy. Mm-hmm. And from this energy, it goes out over the world, and it comes back to us.
Yeah.
And we know that because here we are.
Yeah.
We're in our little building on the corner.
Yeah.
You're creating an environment someone can create the environment for themselves by putting on a record or putting on Spotify or something, listening to a podcast or something like that. But there's those moments when I think, I don't know what I want to listen to. I don't like, and then I turn on the radio and say, okay, let me let someone else curate my environment for me for a little bit.
It's like the Jaguar coming up, you know, Jaguar show coming up. I mean, you can sit and listen to the things that you've heard a million times, but you listen to Jaguar, you're going to listen to something you probably have not heard of.
Yeah.
And that's going to be, it's not narcissism anymore. It's about the conversation. It's about what's out there in the culture. It's really very open to things up.
And I'm getting to a big milestone in my life this next week and a half. And this last year, I told myself I wanted to hear a lot of music and that I wanted to direct my energy towards trying to pick up on some of the opportunities to expand my music mind and use some of the friends and places that I might be able to go. And so it's been a wonderful experience. And I even tried to expand my mind a little bit farther into theater. I've always been a little bit into it, but I'm trying to do a teeny little thing where I go and see several plays at APT, and then I'm just going to camp.
So what's your milestone? What's your milestone?
A milestone?
Yeah.
Wow. I got a few.
Okay. I thought you said a big milestone was coming up.
Oh, I'm having a big birthday.
Oh, okay. Oh,
big
excellent.
Birthday. And actually, I'm heading up to Alaska. I have a child up there, and we're going to celebrate it up there. And
one more trip around the sun. That's good.
Boy, I'll tell you. It's an awful pretty place up there. Oh, wait. Did I tell anyone that? I didn't tell you where, though. Good luck finding
it. I have not been to Alaska. I had a friend who was going to... She's promised that we were going to go up there at some point, and then she went and did it on her own. So she's listening right now. You know who you are. And so... But I think it's because it never kind of came together, and she wanted to really do that, so she went up there. So wherever it is, it's waiting for you.
It's definitely waiting for you. So the time will come when you finally turn your vehicle that direction and say, when it gets back, I'm donating it to Ward.
Well, we're going to Scotland this summer. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we'll be leaving for Scotland. And we went last summer. That's the Fringe Festival is on. Yeah. And it's really fun. There's dramatists, comedians, whatever. And the last time we went, we saw, Kafka's Metamorphosis, the musical with puppets.
I didn't expect he was going to say that. I don't know if everyone else is giggling at home.
It was pretty darn good. But you know what? During all these years, Companion and I have never gotten COVID. And we got COVID when we went to Edinburgh. I don't know what happened. So we're doing a redo because we only had about a little bit of time in Edinburgh, so we're going back to Edinburgh. So Scotland, if you ever want to go to some place that's really beautiful and striking, and Edinburgh is a wonderful, quaint, really nice little town. I love towns that remind me of Madison. Like Helsinki, I've been to Helsinki. It's like Madison's the capital of the whole country, It's just kind of like really cool. I feel that way about Edinburgh. It's just a nice little town.
I was at a wedding once sitting next to a gal who just decided she wasn't going to stay in the year since she moved it. There and just been totally happy ever since.
Oh, very good. Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm out of here.
They sort of speak English there, which is nice too.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. But they come back and visit once in a while.
Alrighty, well, thank you so much for
being
here.
Thank you for having me and giving me an opportunity to see who he really is.
who I really am. Yes. You haven't met Mel yet, though.
No,
you haven't
not,
met
Mel well, yet. Well, I think I have. I used to help with Chris Powers for many years.
Did you? Okay.
So I'd be roaming around in here you guys were here. I've been at the station. I think I started in 1985 here.
Okay.
So I started as a... one of your community advisory board people.
Mel had a program at that point. I think it was late 80s with Jan Levinthal. Do you know Jan?
Yes.
Yes, of course. We all know Jan. And it was called Anything Goes, and it was an arts magazine. They would interview artists and writers and things like that. And that was how I first heard of Mel. He wasn't Mel then, but he was on the air. And they did a very funny... it just cracked me up. They did a very funny take on the War of the Worlds for one Halloween. And it was the Martians were invading Madison.
I think I might have heard it.
The Martians were invading Madison, but they were stuck in traffic on the South Belt Line. So they couldn't quite get here. And I was like, this guy's funny.
I kind of recall that.
People don't know that about Mel. Mel is published funny. He's got three books out there. Two were mainstream published books, and one was... self-published, but he sold quite a few copies of that. And that was the famous Elvis the Messiah. And he's published funny. I mean, it's just like he's guaranteed, it's like seal of approval. Somebody actually risked, publishing a book that he wrote, so more than one.
Well, I have to say, once I was the artist for Wart, and they asked me if I wanted to do T-shirt, but I said no, because I want my work to be something they could use forever. Oh. And so the theme of the piece I did is Teach Your Children Wart. So we did a limited edition of prints.
Oh, very nice.
And then they were sold to our patrons. So that was a fun experience. And it's exciting to be able to visually put the experience of radio out there for our fans. thanks again for having me.
Yeah. So I think we've come to the end of the program. What time you got over there on the old clicker?
We got about 1 minute left.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being here, E-Town.
Thank you. it was really nice.
Yes. Yeah. I look forward to seeing everybody in the future out there enjoying our WRT great events. And, of course, the summer will come to end so quickly, so run to your calendars now and make sure you got those weekends and weekdays marked off. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So next week we have a couple more people for our Minion Moments. And one of our guests next week is actually going to be dialing in from West Virginia. So,
cool.
I thought that'd be alerting you. I don't know if you're going to be here next week, whether or not. But yeah, so that's going to be fun. And I kind of was partial to that, obviously, having grown up in Eastern Kentucky myself. So we have somebody who's going to tell us a little bit about what's going on in West Virginia these days. And so that'll be fun. And thank you so much for listening, everybody. We've got, of course, the Jaguar coming up next. And we've got news, blues, and lots of other stuff here on WRT. So thank you so much. I want to announce the weekend. So you can officially slow down production at this point, okay? whatever, no matter what your capitalist masters may tell you. All right, we'll talk to you again next week. And thanks so much for being here, Luthor, and for your contributions.
My pleasure. Yeah. It's been fun.
We'll hope to see you again.
Yeah. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison.
Hot pants! Hey! Hot pants! Smoking!
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, July 18th.
In addition to protecting children from internet pornography, shouldn't we protect them from seeing Congress critters shamelessly sucking up to Trump and publicly prostituting themselves to billionaires? Consider the raw obscenity of the GOP ramming its gross budget bill into law. Even many conservatives gagged at the depravity of forcibly taking food stamps and Medicaid from millions of everyday people, just so a few extremely rich elites can satisfy their insatiable lust for tax breaks. The stench of greed in their law is so offensive that Republicans are now trying to perfume their minginess by branding all those who are being denied access to food and health care as moochers. Get off welfare and go find a job. These shameless lawmakers even insist they're helping the poor by, quote, transitioning them from Medicaid to employer-provided health care. It's always instructive to hear $174,000 a year taxpayer-insured politicos scold hard-hit families for taking public aid. Apparently, it never dawns on these pecksniffs that dead-end jobs available to the poor don't come with any health care. Well, sniffed GOP leader.